Chapter 7 Fertilizer. One of the great changes in our world during the last 50 years has been the Green Revolution, the so-called agricultural revolution in many parts of the Third World. This revolution was supposed to rapidly bring the Third World countries into the 20th century, and allow them to compete on an equal basis with the more advanced Western nations. As the 20th century now recedes into history, it is apparent that this objective has not been achieved. Asian and Latin American countries are offering more competition in the production of finished goods at a much cheaper labor cost, but in agriculture, despite the fact that vast new markets have been created for the Rockefeller chemical operations, the alleviation of poverty, which supposedly was the goal of the Green Revolution, remains a chimera. In fact, those areas of the world which have long been marked on the maps as undeveloped had no notation of the fact that this was a code word for unexploited, that is, not yet exploited by the rapacious international conspirators. The only real interest of the financiers is to develop markets for their products which can return a profit. Because most of the Third World countries are unable to pay for goods, a complex system has been developed whereby the American taxpayer sends aid to the Third World. He works in a factory to make a tractor, the tractor is then sent to Bolivia, and then a payment, for it is extorted from the workers' wages. A further refinement is a system whereby American or international banks lend the money to these countries so that they can pay for the goods. The Federal Reserve System then guarantees these uncollectible loans with American taxpayers' funds. Once again, the worker has the money extorted from his paycheck to cover the cost of the goods he produces. The framers of the Constitution never envisioned such a development, with the result that, when the worker cites the Constitution for relief from the extortion, the judge indignantly throws him into jail for irrelevant and confusing testimony. The world is now a Gulag archipelago, run by the ruthless minions of the Rockefeller-Rothschild conglomerate. Its gods are money and power, its only enemy is the advocate of liberty. The current hero of the Rockefeller interests is Norman Borlaug, who was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1970. An Iowa farmer, Borlaug had been sent to Mexico by the Rockefeller interests in 1944 to develop new types of grain. During his experiments there, he mated 60,000 different species of wheat, resulting in the creation of an all-tropical race of dwarfs, double 113-point dwarfs and triple dwarfs by 1964. This was hailed as the Green Revolution. The resulting superwheat produced greater yields, but this was done by hyping the soil with huge amounts of fertilizer per acre, the fertilizer being the product of nitrates and petroleum, commodities controlled by the Rockefellers. Huge quantities of herbicides and pesticides were also used, creating additional markets for the Rockefeller chemical empire. In effect, the Green Revolution was merely a chemical revolution. At no point could the Third World nations be expected to pay for the huge amounts of chemical fertilizers and pesticides. This was again taken care of by the system of foreign aid which was already in place. The Rockefeller interests also sent Robert Chandler to the Philippines to develop a miracle rice. The result was a rice which used three times the previous amount of fertilizer. This rice matured in 4 months instead of the previous 6 months, producing three crops a year instead of two. When two Philippine groups of wealthy entrepreneurs began to contest each other for local spin-offs of the profits of miracle rice, the Rockefellers decided to oust one group, the Marcos Combine, replacing it with the Aquino faction, which had close ties to the Chase Manhattan Bank, and which could be depended on to pay interest on loans. As usual, Rockefeller philanthropy was closely interlinked with markets, profits and political control. Modern fertilizer is a petroleum-based industry. At the conclusion of the Second World War, the munitions manufacturers found themselves faced with huge inventories of nitrates. Because of the outbreak of peace, which is always regarded with horror by the philanthropic foundations, new markets had to be found, and quickly, for these commodities. Nitrogen and nitrates were key ingredients in the manufacture of bombs and shells. A comparable peacetime market had to be developed. following the precept which they had established after the First World War, when the monopolists, faced with a huge supply of leftover chlorine, which had been manufactured at great expense to cause intensive suffering and death, found that the only possible market was to sell it to American communities, who would then pour it into their water supplies, it was decided in 1945 that the only outlet for the huge inventory of nitrates was to put it into the food chain, as fertilizer. The increasing rate of deaths from heart attacks in the United States, for the past 50 years, has been ingeniously explained by apologists for the medical monopoly, as one more illustration of the fact that Americans were living longer, their advancing years making them more susceptible to degenerative diseases such as cancer and heart trouble. This was the usual cop-out from the medical establishment, which conveniently ignored important advances in the American lifestyle. For a number of years during the 19th century, epidemics of cholera and typhoid fever had devastated the inhabitants of large American cities, the outbreaks being due to poor sanitation and contamination of the water supply. When the monopolists poured their excess chlorine into the water supplies after the First World War, the result was widely hailed as 114 points having ended the epidemics of cholera and typhoid fever. In fact, chlorination had not been responsible for this development. Typhoid fever had been largely due to the contamination of city streets by large quantities of horse droppings, which festered and drew flies. When it rained, this contamination was washed into the water supply. With the advent of the automobile, and the disappearance of horses from city streets, as our main means of transportation, typhoid fever vanished almost overnight. This occurred during the 1920s, when automobiles replaced horses on the streets. The dumping of this war material into our water supply did have one unforeseen effect. It brought on a new epidemic, an epidemic of heart attacks. The chlorine in the water combined with animal fats in the diet to form a chemical amalgam, which then formed a gummy substance in the arteries. This created a medical condition called atherosclerosis. The buildup of this gummy substance in the arteries gradually interfered with the circulation of the blood, finally closing off the main arteries to the heart, and bringing on the attacks of angina pectoris and coronary heart attacks. Here again, a seeming advance in hygiene proved to be yet another boon for the medical monopoly, as the offices of the physicians were filled with Americans suffering from heart disease. At the conclusion of World War II, the monopolists began a concerted effort to dump their surplus nitrates into the American food chain. County agents throughout the United States were told to advise farmers in their areas to increase their use of fertilizers, herbicides, and pesticides. This advice served to make farming even more capital intensive, forcing the farmers to go to the banks to borrow more money, and paving the way for the program of forcing the individual farmers off the land, creating great agricultural monopolies, similar to the Soviet Agricultural Trust. Farmers also borrowed heavily to buy expensive tractors which ran on gasoline, greatly adding to the Rockefeller revenues, and at the same time depriving them of the fertilizer formerly available from their horses. It was hardly coincidental that the banks, which so cheerfully anteed up the loans needed by the farmers who faithfully followed the instructions of their county agents, were banks who got their funds from the Federal Reserve System. This monopoly of the nation's money and credit had been planned at a secret meeting of conspirators on Jekyll Island, Georgia in November of 1910, a meeting presided over by Senator Nelson Aldrich, whose daughter had recently married John D. Rockefeller, Jr. The nutritional value of foods grown in heavily fertilized soil, and the fact that these foods then undergo extensive processing to render them more convenient for large-scale warehousing, transportation, and retailing, has been glossed over by the medical monopoly. A protesting voice was heard when Dr. H.M. Sinclair, a leading nutritionist, and head of the Laboratory of Human Nutrition, Magdalen College, Oxford, gave a 1957 World Health Day address, which was reprinted in the British Medical Journal, December 14, 1957. Dr. Sinclair recalled that from his earliest days as a medical 115-point student, my clinical teachers could not answer why the expectation of life in this century of the middle-aged man is hardly different from what it was at the beginning of this century, or even a century ago. This means that despite the great advances in medicine, pneumonia almost abolished, tuberculosis comparatively rare, the magnificent advances in surgery, endocrinology, and public health. A middle-aged man cannot expect to live more than 4 years longer than he could a century ago. And indeed, in Scotland, the expectation of life is now actually decreasing. In 1893, a German agricultural chemist, Dr. Julius Hensel, wrote in his book Bread from Stones, "Agriculture has entered into the sign of cancer. We cannot be indifferent to what kind of crops we raise for our nourishment or with what substances our fields are fertilized. It cannot be all sufficient that great quantities are harvested, but that great quantity must also be of good quality. It is indisputable that by merely fertilizing with marl, that is, with carbonate of lime, such a large yield may be obtained as to make a man inclined to always content himself with marl, but with such a one-sided fertilization slowly but surely, evil effects of various kinds will develop. These have given rise to the axiom of experience, manuring with lime makes rich fathers but poor sons. As our present fine flour, freed from bran, furnished almost entirely devoid of nutrients, we need not wonder at the great number of modern maladies." This was written in 1893, before the Rockefeller interests flooded the world with their petroleum-based fertilizers. To counteract the growing array of inert, nutrition-deficient foods, the minions of the medical monopoly have not been idle. While conducting wars of attrition against the leading exponents of better nutrition, the Food and Drug Administration and the American Medical Association have valiantly defended the use of chemical fertilizers. The widely circulated AMA magazine, Today's Health, found in every public school and library, in September 1958, stated, "Extensive research conducted by the federal government has shown that the nutritional value of crops is not affected by the soil of the fertilizers used." This was contradicted by the Rockefeller Foundation's own Dr. Alexis Carrel, who wrote, "Chemical fertilizers, by increasing the abundance of the crops without replacing all the exhausted elements of the soil, have indirectly contributed to change the nutritive value of cereal grains and vegetables. Hens have been compelled by artificial diet and mode of living to enter the ranks of mass producers. Has not the quality of their eggs been modified? The same question may be asked about milk, because cows are now confined to the stable all year round, and are fed with manufactured provender. Hygienists have not paid sufficient attention to the genesis of diseases. Their studies of conditions of life and diet, and of their effect on the physiological and mental state of modern man, are superficial, incomplete, and of too short duration. Despite the claims of government researchers, the importance of soil is shown by the fact that the proportion of iron in lettuce can 116 point vary from 1 mg per 100 to 50 mg per 100, according to conditions of the soil in which it is grown. The Middle West has long been known as the goiter belt, because of a widespread deficiency of iodine in the soil. The British Isles, which have been heavily farmed for almost 2,000 years, have such deficiencies of minerals in the soil that the British are known the world over for their bad teeth. The present system of agricultural chemistry was fathered by Dr. Justus von Liebig, a German chemistry professor who suggested that minerals should be added to the soil and acids added to make them more available to plants. Chemistry agriculture uses soluble chemicals which are either acidic or basic, their final effect being to acidify the soil, while the use of chemical minerals renders the soil useless. It has been suggested that we are still living on the benefits conferred by the last glacial age, and that the only way to remineralize the soil is to undergo another glacial age, as has previously happened about every 100,000 years. Dr. W. M. Albrecht, chairman of the Department of Soils at the University of Missouri School of Agriculture, states, "While it has long been common belief that disease is an infliction visited upon us from without, there is a growing recognition that it possibly originates from within because of deficiencies and failure to nourish ourselves completely. Fuller knowledge of nutrition is revealing mounting numbers of cases of deficiency diseases. These tend to be traced, not only to the supplies in the food and supermarket where the family budget may provide them, but a bit further, and closer to their origin, namely, the fertilization of the soil, the point at which all agricultural production takes off. These increasing cases classified as deficiencies are bolstering the truth of that old adage, which told us that to be well fed is to be healthy. Many of the strange new diseases which have arisen to plague us in recent years are found to have a nutritional origin. Dr. Josephson identifies myasthenia gravis as an endocrine disorder resulting from a deficiency of manganese, which may be caused either by defective assimilation of manganese or by defective metabolism. The need for chemical fertilizers may have stemmed from a long-standing flaw in the method of farming, the use of the moldboard plow. Edward H. Faulkner, professor at the University of Oklahoma, discovered that the moldboard plow was destroying the fertility of the soil. He counteracted this effect by disking green manure into the surface and eliminating the plow, an instrument which sandwiches virtually all green manure, decaying plant matter and vegetable residue found on the surface of the ground, some 6 to 8 inches below the surface, where it forms a barrier to water, which should rise from the water table. The upper 6 inches then becomes dry, as the capillary action of water movement is blocked. Plants grown on this plow-depleted soil attract insects, while their vitamin and mineral content is depleted. The plants become sickly and die. 117. Seeing this result, the farmer then decides that the problem is the lack of some element in the soil, not realizing that it is the plow which has interfered with the capillary action of water in the soil. He then becomes a ready customer for large quantities of chemical fertilizers. One of the principal producers of these fertilizers was the Rockefeller-controlled American Agricultural and Chemical Company. Not surprisingly, one of its directors, John C. Traphagen, was also a director of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the Rockefeller Institute of Medicine. A prime mover and director of the American Cancer Society, Traphagen was president of the Bank of New York and director of the Fifth Avenue Bank. He was also a director of Wyandotte Chemicals, Hudson Insurance, Brokers and Shippers Insurance, Caledonian American Insurance, Foreign Bondholders Protective Association, Sun Insurance, Limited, one of the three principal Rothschild firms, Atlantic Mutual Insurance, Eagle Fire Insurance, Norwich Union Fire Insurance, Limited, International Nickel, Royal Insurance Company, Royal Liverpool Insurance, and many other London insurance firms, most of whom were within the Rothschild orbit. Also on the board of American Agricultural and Chemical was John Foster Dulles, of the Wall Street law firm, Sullivan and Cromwell. He served as Eisenhower's Secretary of State, while his brother Alan was head of the Central Intelligence Agency. Dulles was also a director of International Nickel, Bank of New York, American Banknote Company, which furnished the paper used by the Federal Reserve System to print its paper money, which was backed by paper bonds, and chairman of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, of which Alger Hiss was president, director of the New York Public Library, Union Theological Seminary, and the New York State Banking Board. Dulles had been secretary at the Hague Peace Conference in 1907, and served as his uncle's secretary at the Paris Peace Conference in 1918, Robert Lansing, Wilson's Secretary of State. Dulles later served on the Reparations Commission and the Supreme Economic Council with Bernard Baruch in 1919. He attended the Berlin Debt Conference in 1933, and was American delegate to the United Nations in San Francisco when Alger Hiss wrote the United Nations Charter in 1945. Both Dulles and brother Alan had attended a historic conference with Baron Kurt von Schroeder and Adolf Hitler in Cologne in 1933, when the Dulles brothers assured Hitler that Wall Street bankers would advance him the money to launch his Nazi regime in Germany. Also on the board of American Ag and Chem was George C. Clark of the investment bankers, Clark and Dodge, John R. Dillon, chairman of an excelled chemical company, Lone Star Cement, and was also a theater tycoon, director of National Theaters, 20th Century Fox, Spurs Theaters, and also an aircraft tycoon, as director of Curtis Wright and Wright Aeronautical. Also on the board was banker Robert Stone, partner of Hayden Stone, director of Rockefeller's Mesaby Iron Ore and Island Greek Coal 118. Company, Contalagrower Sugar Company, U.S. Envelope, John P. Chase Company, Philadelphia and Norfolk Steamship Company, and Muskeg Company and William Whitmore Company. Another member of Egg and Chim was Elliot V. Bell, who was also director of the American Cancer Society. He had been a financial writer for the New York Times from 1929 to 1939, which gave him entree into the highest financial circles. He became economic advisor to Thomas Dewey in 1940, superintendent of banks for New York State from 1947 to 49, Director of McGraw-Hill, Editor of the business magazine Business Week, Director of Rockefeller's Chase Manhattan Bank, New York Life, New York Telephone Company, Tricontinental Corporation, Revere Copper and Brass and other firms. He also was appointed to the Committee on Social Security Finance for You, and trustee of the John S. Guggenheim Foundation, the Roger Strauss Foundation. His daughter is a leading New York socialite, Mrs. Thomas Hoving, one of the beautiful people. The use of chemical fertilizers caused the protein content of vegetables to drop steadily at the rate of 10% a year. However, the most dangerous effect, and the probable cause of much nutritionally induced disease, was the fact that chemical fertilizer reduced the amount of potassium in the soil, while increasing the amount of sodium. Potassium and sodium are the leaders of the two electrically opposite groups. Inactive potassium in the system precipitates illness, especially cancer. The increased sodium may explain the dramatic increase in the incidence of high blood pressure throughout the United States, because our population is ingesting steadily increasing amounts of sodium from foods grown in chemically fertilized soil, while simultaneously suffering from the effects of steadily declining levels of potassium in the human system. Potassium is especially necessary for the regulation of the heartbeat. Its lack in the body makes the system prone to sudden heart attacks. Nutritionists now believe that the use of chemical fertilizers in the soil causes 70% of all anemia in the citizens of the United States, because these fertilizers do not replace iron in the soil, but actually remove it. The use of chemical fertilizers also accelerated the domination of the world's grain supply by large corporations which are closely affiliated with the Rockefeller interests. In 1919, the largest grain grower in the world was the Montana Farming Corporation. At that time, wheat was selling for a guaranteed price of $2.20 a bushel and the combine was raking in huge profits. Montana's board of directors was headed by J.P. Morgan, whose vast interests in banking, steel and railroads had given no inkling of his desire to become a farmer. Morgan was serving on the Federal Advisory Council of the Federal Reserve Board, representing the New York Central Banking Area. His associates on the board of Montana Farming were Rockefeller's banker, James Stillman of the National City Bank. M-2 of his daughters married two sons of William 119. Rockefeller, Francis Hinckley Sisson, vice president of the Morgan-controlled bank, Guaranty Trust. M-it is now Morgan Guaranty Trust, Charles D. Norton, whom Morgan placed as President Taft's personal secretary during the Taft presidency. Norton served as president of Morgan's First National Bank, later merged with Rockefeller's National City Bank to form the present banking giant, Citibank. Norton had been one of the original conspirators present at Jekyll Island to secretly draft the Federal Reserve Act. He was a director of Montgomery Ward, Equitable Life, at Tidewater Oil, and the Delaware and Lackawanna Railroad. He was also director of a number of Morgan's favorite charities, the American Red Cross, the Russell Sage Foundation and the Metropolitan Museum. Also on the board of Montana Farming was Charles H. Sabin, a director of Guaranty Trust, Merchants and Metals National Bank, president of the Asia Banking Corporation, American Foreign Securities Corporation, the McKay Companies, Postal Telegraph and many other firms. Today, the world grain trade is firmly in the hand of five firms: Cargill, Continental Grain, Louis Dreyfus, Bunge and André. These firms have waxed rich and powerful by riding the tide of the super grains developed by the Rockefeller Trust. They maintain close contact with these interests, and the banking interests of the Rockefellers, relying principally on the Chase Manhattan International Network. These firms have also profited from the Rockefeller Foundation's development of hybrid seeds, notably corn. From a commercial standpoint, the attraction of the hybrids is that they cannot reproduce themselves. As a result, the farmer has to ante up the money to buy a new supply of the hybrid seeds each year. Hybrid seeds have another great attraction for the monopolists. They give the parent company, which owns the patent, a monopoly on that particular variety of seed. Thus we have the twin factors of commercial viability and monopoly to give the banks and the chemical trust a stranglehold on the American farmer. Hybrid seeds yield an average increase of 20 to 30% more per acre, which is a strong selling point to the farmer. Likewise, the miracle wheat which was originated at the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center at El Buden, Mexico, resulted in the development of a wheat strain which could stand up under the force of lashing rains and tropical storms. It was produced by crossing Mexican wheat with the strains of Japanese dwarfs which had short, tough stems. Norinton, from the island of Honshu, was hardy enough to stand up under Japanese typhoons. It became the type which made the Green Revolution a reality. After 1960, the Mexican station released a long line of wheats, Manor 60, for the year 1960, Pinnock 62, Pinjamo 62, Sonora 64, Lerma Rajo 64, India 66, Seed Serra 66, Super X 67, Yekor 70, and Kajim 71. Although they required intensive fertilization and irrigation, they all could thrive in tropical countries. The Big Five wield enormous political and financial power because of their enormous cash flow, and because so many governments depend on their food supply to 120-point maintain political stability. This was demonstrated during what historians now call the Great Soviet Grain Robbery in 1972. Arranged by Henry Kissinger, longtime Rockefeller stooge from the Chase Manhattan Bank, this deal bailed out the tottering Soviet government, while costing the American taxpayer many billions. In July 1972, the Soviet Union bought wheat from the United States, in an attempt to compensate for the disastrous incompetence of the Soviet communal system of agriculture. In 1963, Russia had begun a policy of purchasing wheat from abroad by buying 6.8 million tons from Canada for $500 million. To pay for the purchases from the United States in 1972, the Soviet Union was allowed to cover the payment in the following manner. The Central Bank of Hungary, acting for the Soviet Union, placed an order to sell the dollar short for $20 billion. Secretary of the Treasury, John Connolly, then devalued the dollar by 10%. The Soviet Union made $4 billion on its short selling of the dollar, and paid for the grain. Michel Sedona, who had been deeply involved with the Rothschilds and the Hambro family in international financial manipulations, described the process from his prison cell, where he was later found dead. In its fathomless naivete, the United States has provided the Soviet Union with $4 billion, money that has, since doubtless been invested in the destruction of its benefactors. I began to see then that America was the consort of its own ruin. I tell you, in all of history, no power has so blindly armed and succored its enemies as she. The Soviet grain deal resulted in increasing the price of all food supplies in the United States by 20%. Because of restrictions imposed by Congress on shipping grain in foreign vessels, a measure which had been passed to aid our dwindling maritime fleet, the Soviet grain purchases in 1972 cost the American taxpayer an additional $55 million in subsidies to bulk carriers. The American carriers shipped the grain for $16 a ton, although foreign vessels would have carried it for $9 a ton. To this day, only a few international grain traders and Soviet officials actually know the price charged for 40 million tons of grain which the Soviets bought from the United States between 1971 and 1977. Officials at the U.S. Department of Agriculture state that they have no records on the price paid, or whether it was ever paid. Only Henry Kissinger knows, and he is not telling. The Big Five grain dealers are also heavily involved in currency manipulations, trading vast sums each day in currency futures, because their grain deals cause great fluctuations in the valuation of world currencies. With their inside track, they make huge profits, whether the value of the currencies moves up or down. Cargill now has 25% of the world's grain trade, Bunge of Argentina has 20%. Continental Grain began operations during the Napoleonic Wars, supplying grain to both sides. It has 25% of the world grain trade. The present head of the firm, Michel Fribourg, owns 90% of the stock. With his son René, Michel Fribourg was a French citizen who joined the U.S. Army Intelligence during World War II. He 121-point subsequently became a U.S. citizen. André, a Swiss family, belonging to a strict sect of Swiss Calvinists who are members of the worldwide and very militant Plymouth Brethren, and Dreyfus, which has 20% of the world grain trade. Dreyfus is now headed by Nathaniel Samuels, who served on President Nixon's team as Under Secretary for Economic Affairs. The chairman of Bunge, Walter Klein, whose office is at 1 Chase Manhattan Plaza, New York, is a policy-making official of the U.S.-USSR Trade and Economic Council. 122.